Amen. As I mentioned a second ago, we're going to be beginning in the last part of chapter 4, going to a few of the questions with that, then going into chapter 5 tonight. Beginning in 4:27. When we're talking in Exodus, and again, if you've read the book of Exodus, which I encourage you to do, who's the focal point of the book of Exodus?
Moses,
isn't it? Okay. So we've got a man here that was born when Egypt was in bondage. A lot of harsh things were going on. And he lived with whom? Raised by whom? Pharaoh's daughter. Okay? So he had privileges. He had education in world history, education in their religions, in their idols. He had the education in speech, in writing. He had education in all those things that you would think, okay, a Pharaoh's child would have. And he did. Customs, everything involved with that. Was there interaction with Hebrews at that time? Well, whatever it was through his mother. The things maybe he had learned at the teachers in Egypt, and maybe some things dealing, but it's silent on that. So here's 40 years goes by, and he tries to be a deliverer from the bondage and oppression and slavery, and he fails. So now where does he go? Into the wilderness. And in that wilderness, a complete change for him, something he's not accustomed to, something he hadn't really had contact with. He becomes a shepherd. He becomes a man out there in the wilderness, and really not around Hebrews anymore, okay, or not around Egyptians anymore, way out in the land of Midian. And for 40 years, he does these things that a shepherd does. Not worried about being a deliverer, has a wife and a couple of sons and a good father-in-law, and he's just living a life out there. Yes? Somewhat, okay? So now, he's out there under, at the foot of the mountain, called Horeb or Sinai, and he's doing his sheep, what he always done, day by day by day, what he's done for all these last 40 years. And there's a bush, and there's a fire in the midst of it, and that fire starts to talk to him. Now, has God, Jehovah, the Lord, talked to him up to this point? No. So this is different. This is different, okay? And so with that talking to him, he informs him of what he'd like to be done. He informs him of a few things. Basically, go back to Egypt, okay? And convince the Pharaoh to let my people go. So, wow, so let's see, he was Egyptian, and now he's been a shepherd for 40 years, and now, man, God's saying, let's go back. Why don't you go back to Egypt and do what? Well, go back to the Hebrews, and I want you to talk to the Pharaoh and just tell him to let my people go, all millions of them. Just let them leave Egypt. Oh, by the way, I'll be with you, Moses. So, quite a change, huh? Quite a change. But this man did it. Now, did he have some proofs that God gave him at that moment in reference to the bush and around the bush? Yeah, sure did. A couple, three miracles in there that he did on him. Okay. One was he had a staff turned into a serpent, which, you know, occurs a few more times. And then the leprosy of his hand, in and out, a great disease, and he saw that, the visual part of that. And then the third thing was he poured some water on the ground, it turned to blood. And what's interesting, these are all objective evidences. They're evidences to convince him that this you're not imagining what's going on. What a change. I don't know what I'd done if something happens like that. Okay? Or maybe yourself. But it's a change for him from the habits he's developed, the people he's known, and all this sort of thing from the past. So he packs up his family and they head off to Egypt. So that's kind of where we're at. All right? So in 4:27, now the Lord said to Aaron, Aaron was his brother. And his brother's 3 years older. And so the Lord's talking to Aaron now. I don't know if Aaron's been talked to before, okay? By Jehovah God. 27, now the Lord said to Aaron, go to meet Moses in the wilderness, okay? So he went and met him at the mountain of God and kissed him. Moses told Aaron all the words of the Lord with which he had sent him and all the signs that he had commanded him to do. Then Moses and Aaron went and assembled all the elders of the sons of Israel. Stop right there. So there's a gap in time there. There's an acquaintance going on. They've left the bush. And now these two brothers are going to Egypt to convey this message. And apparently there's a good reunion between, I don't know if they ever met in that last 40 years. Who knows? There's no indication of that. But it's a good reunion of these two brothers. So the Lord talks to Aaron, which may have been a new occurrence for him. I don't know how that happened, but it happened, because it says it did. And then when they got to Egypt, they went into that land of Goshen, which was where the Israelites, the Hebrews, had settled in a very good, fertile land, okay? Because at one time they were favored by the Pharaoh when they came with Joseph. And then Moses and Aaron went and assembled all the elders of the sons of Israel. And 4:30, Aaron spoke all the words which the Lord had spoken to Moses. Same thing again. He then performed the signs in the sight of the people. These signs, these three things again happened to him. Okay, but he's showing those people that. No doubt there's some conveyance there. I'm your deliverer, and the prophecies from Abraham and all that sort of thing. And so, in 31, so, therefore, conclusion, the people believed. Now, they've been in their bondage for hundreds of years, centuries. Exposed to idolatry, exposed to the Egyptians, no prophet among them. But they understood these signs at this point in time, and they says they believed. And when they heard that the Lord was concerned about the sons of Israel, he's concerned, and that he had seen affliction, they've been afflicted, and you'll see that occurring over and over and over, the affliction, the bondage, the heavy strain of labor that they're under. Then they bowed low and worshiped. It appears that the Israeli leaders, the sons of Israel, these Hebrews were ready to follow Moses, to follow the dictates of the Lord, which had been prophesied for many years, to let my people go. But does that hold up? We'll see. There's always doubts. Now, in this apparent bowing down and worshiping and seeing the affliction, that develops hope within them. Develops hope. So that's where we'll continue that in chapter 5. Let's look at a few questions on chapters 3 and 4. Okay? There's a few questions there that we'd like to go over. And that's on page 13 of your material. When or where did God appear to Moses in the burning bush? And what is God's grand plan for his people? Which we just went over. That he appeared at the Mount Horeb, Sinai, which is a major area, a focal area, the area, okay, that they're going to return to, aren't they? So he's familiar with the territory, familiar with the area, Familiar with the landscape, watering holes, all that sort of thing. So it's because he's been a shepherd. And what was the grand plan? Well, in 3:8, deliver them from the power of the Egyptians to the land of milk and honey, the great promise, to the land of Canaan. Call it the land promise, which we saw, okay, promised Abraham in Genesis 12, along with the great nation promise and the messianic promise. Now, in question number 3, what significance is there in God referring to himself as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? What's the significance of that in 3:8? I know it says 3:6 there. Okay? Excuse me, that's 3:6. What's the significance of that? Why bring that up? Is there a promise made, maybe? There's a covenant. Okay? And God keeps his promises, doesn't he? Okay? But we've got to always remember when God keeps his promises, they're in his time frame. When he wants to enact it. Sometimes we've got our own plan. Sometimes. But the significance of that is that that's the same God that made that promise is now the same Lord that's now talking to Moses. Same Lord. There's importance to that. Now, question number 6. In 3:21 and 22. What promise was given regarding Israel's deliverance? 3:21 and 22. That's right. God's thinking ahead. The Lord's thinking ahead. And that'd be the obvious question. You know, a million of us are going to leave. A few million of us are going to leave and take everything with us. What can we have? I mean, what provisions? What housing? What animals? What gold and silver? Okay? And a lot of things. Are we just going to go and leave? No, this God's making provisions. He's thinking ahead. And he's going to inform them of that. Give you confidence that God knows what he's doing. Gives you confidence in Moses as the prophet of God, the mouthpiece of God. He's planning ahead. Yes. Yes. Okay? Confidence, hope, those things that are necessary. Now, number 8. We went over those before, last class. And here's this Moses in the wilderness. All of a sudden, he's been doing this for 40 years. He was rejected by his people 4 years before that, so he's 80 years old. And all of a sudden, this voice in fire from the midst of the bush is talking to him. And Moses has excuses. I don't know if I'm going to obey what you're saying. I don't know if I can do what you're saying for me to do. I have some doubts. I have some doubts. And these are doubts that are common to man, I guess you'd say. All right? And the first one he says in 3:11 through 12, who am I? You know, This job's a big job. And I've just been out here with some sheep for 40 years. And I don't know if he commanded much before that. So it's a big job. All of a sudden, you're the super CEO of, who knows, Microsoft, okay? Or Amazon. The president.
Yeah.
Yes. Forty years later, I don't know. They forgot all about him, about the crime that he committed. Apparently, some different kings and pharaohs are now in power. So it's an interesting point. But no, he has not forgot his training. There's probably people alive in Egypt. Maybe that's why he got access to the pharaoh when he came back, because of his heritage. I don't know. But certainly, he had access to the pharaoh.
All right.
Well, that's a basic comment. No, not really qualifying any of this. Who am I to do this job? Okay? So we went into number 2 excuse. What is his name? Well, you know, they're going to ask, who sent you? Let's see, a flame in the middle of the bush sent me. All right? That'll go over big. All right? Who sent you? The I Am sent you. The one who is self-existent. The one who depends on nothing for existence. For his power, his wisdom, anything. The Creator. And any other word you want to place on that. The name cannot describe. Again, all the idols had names. They all had names. But you can't name this being. Unique, special, one of a kind. Singular. One true Lord. So who sent you? The I Am sent you. So that's his name. And this kind of leads to the question too. If you're going to bring up questions about why I can't serve, you know, says I don't have all the answers. Well, no, you don't have all the answers. But God says, you listen to me and you trust me. I've given you these signs. You believe those signs? Yes. You believe those signs? Believe me. Quite a jump of faith. And the next one in 4:1, 1-9. What if when I go to them, they don't believe me? In our life, sometimes it's like that way. Well, what if? Well, he's trying to predict the future. And the Lord says, don't you worry about that future. What if they don't do this and won't do that? No. You just do what I want you to do. And I'll be with you. Quite a step. Something in our lives like that also, isn't it? Yes, sir.
So many questions Moses is asking kind of makes it seem like he's maybe wanting to wimp out from it, from the task in front of him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like the last three things that happened to him while he was in Egypt, it didn't go so well. He killed that Egyptian. The Pharaoh wanted to kill Moses. And then he tried to intervene with some of his brethren. And he said, who are you? Who made you judge, prince over us? And then he fled. He ran away from there. So I guess if you bring it back to, can we learn from Moses? Can we apply his situation in life to our lives? Sometimes our past can make us timid about how we might move forward with things, but God is promising us the same strength that, you know, any man God has, which is, you know, the strength of God at work within us.
Isn't it a common reaction, generally, if you've been burned in the past, okay, or had a bad experience, you and that same situation comes up again, what do you do with it? What do you do with it, being challenged? What do you do? Okay. What's the thing, a cat jumps on a hot stove, doesn't jump on the stove anymore? Okay. I don't know if cats are that smart. But, all right. But still, okay, it's something to learn, so we have to learn from our past, don't we? And learn from other people. You know, we're learning here from Moses, trying to learn some lessons in life. So let's consider that. Now, in 4:10-17, I have never been eloquent in speech. I was trained, and I know things, and probably a good writer in Egypt, but he's saying I just never was that type of orator. And is that a decent excuse for Moses? No, God doesn't believe it is. Okay? Because all he had to do was plain, simple language. Let my people go. Or these great calamities and great judgments are going to come against you. That's pretty plain. And Pharaoh never had confusion either about that. So he didn't need to be that kind of speaker. But God was angry with him. God was angry with him, but he did say, now let Aaron come with me. He can talk much better than I can. So God let Aaron come with him and endowed Aaron. All right. Now, how we say things is important. It's important, okay? But the message is always the important part. The truth of it. Okay? Some people have certain ability and some don't. So it's just a thing to think about in those excuses that he had. Any comment?
That love of trust in God.
Yes. Sure. Especially under this guy. Okay? At this time. Okay?
Yeah.
I'm going to be with you. And here's some proofs for that. Some tangible proofs.
Now, as we saw, he'd already talked to the leaders, the elders of Israel, okay, and they believed.
Yeah, they wanted to get out of 400 years. They had to get somebody to get out.
Well, they want it quickly, all right? Yes, ma'am. Herod was 3 years older. Okay. It may have been. It doesn't tell you, but this idea of the firstborn dying, or the males dying and that sort of thing, may not have lasted that long. May have lasted a year or so or somewhere. Okay, so it wasn't an ongoing thing for 40 years. And that's just thoughts on my part, because when you see the let's say it's been going on for 40 years while Moses has been gone. Well, one of the complaints that the sons of Israel have, is it ever brought up about all these infanticide going on? No, never brought up. Okay? So their problem was always the labor, the toil. So just an interesting thing. Of course, he didn't forget, but it's interesting. And the 10th plague comes back sort of to that. Okay? Yes, your question. Okay. All right. Again, that was my thoughts. Now, question number 11. What reaction did the elders and Israel give to the message Moses brought in 430 and 31? Have we went over that? They believed. But after they understood that God understood that they were in bondage, that's when they believed. So they want something out of it too. All right, number 12. Please list some examples from experience of trying to do things the way some people think is better instead of trusting God's way. Well, Moses initially wanted to do it his way. It didn't work. So now he's back. God's given an assignment to do it God's way. So, do we have anything in life that we see that God wants it done a certain way, okay, or a certain attitude, and we want to have a difference on that? Do we have examples in our life on that? See, are the things doctrinally that we see the world changing sometimes? And well, I don't know. I think sometimes about infant baptism. Okay, well, why did the world choose infant baptism? What's some of the excuses?
They want people to create religious ideas that are not existing in the Bible because that's what they want.
Some of the excuses are we can't do immersion because we got to baptize the baby, or someone's very sick, we can't immerse them in water. Excuses? Deviating from the plan? It sounds good. Interesting, isn't it? All right. Instruments of music. Ronnie, go ahead.
Well, on the infant baptism, if you think somebody is born in sin, which Catholics do, then you want to get them dunked as soon as you can. Otherwise,
I wait 8 days. Okay.
Because they're holy, basically. They think the baptism being Christian circumcision, that's regulated on circumcision.
And again, I just thank you, Ronnie. You know, the instruments of music, same idea. I make our song better, our singing better. Make us more devoted to God. Well, God has said this over and over.
Do we have any right, authority, to make those changes that, you know, that seem right? So there's a lot of episodes. Any other points on that, but it's the things to think about. Well, withdraw to help people is I'm not going to associate you with you anymore, because God has said that. Okay. That's not love. 1 Corinthians 5, instructed by the apostle to withdraw from this immoral man. Of course, he came back, didn't he? 2 Corinthians. Okay. So, God's plan works if you put it into effect. Just a sideline here. Is there a distinction between family and other people? On withdrawal. There's no distinction. Okay. All right. Anything else before we go on to chapter number 5?
Yes.
So, yes, sir.
Credited as a prophet.
And if we've been around a long time, you see the influence of leadership, you see the influence of the preacher, and how congregations go and what happens to them. And that just happens. And good points that Steve made on that. And in addition to that, in addition to telling them about things that are going to happen in the future, the great thing is in 4:23, where he actually says in 4:23 that when you talk to Pharaoh and refuse to let you go, behold, I will kill the son, your firstborn. So here we go, jump to the 10th plague, I would assume. And so it's a great difficulty that's coming up. And I don't know if you recognize it at this time, Moses or not, and the others, but this is not going to be an easy let my people go. There's going to be death and all kinds of calamities that are going to happen, not to mention the great judgments. So it's not going to be easy for this man who's been a shepherd for 40 years. Not easy for Aaron either. Not easy for Aaron, because the exposure he's had for many years of idolatry and that sort of thing. Now, yes, ma'am. Question 9, why did Jehovah bring Moses near death in 4:24? They were traveling. They were told to travel to Egypt. And he was traveling with his family. And circumcision was the issue. Matter of fact, God said, I'm going to kill you for this. It's a dramatic point that is ingrained in Hebrews, that in order to be a sign of the covenant of Abraham, that is something you're reminded of every day, okay, of that covenant, the males were. So how important was it? Very important. That's why his wife cut the foreskin at that point. There's some other issues in there. But the point is that just an interlude there dealing with this idea of the covenant and keeping the covenant, okay? Now, Moses, whatever at this point, I don't know if he's familiar with it or what happened, okay? Point is, it woke him up. Woke up his wife too. And as a side note here, you don't see his wife coming back too much later. Repeat him. And his kids coming back, or excuse his wife coming back. So I don't know if she went home with him back to Jethro at that point or not. Okay? Or went on to Egypt. The Bible doesn't say. All right. Now, in Exodus 5. And afterward, Moses and Aaron came and said to Pharaoh. Okay, now it's their first encounter with Pharaoh. First encounter. Thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, let my people go, that they may celebrate a feast to me in the wilderness. But Pharaoh said, who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, and besides, I will not let Israel go. Let my people go, that they can celebrate me in the wilderness. You know, we can say that, okay, just let my people go. Just they can go leave Egypt. Well, what's another purpose? That they can worship me. They can deal sacrifices. That they can do those things that honor the Jehovah God, the one of the promise. So that's what they're asking here in addition to that. So it's a great thing for them to understand it as a people, millions of people, that they've also got to worship this God, serve this God. When they do leave the bondage they're under, and this freedom they'll have now, freedom to worship, freedom to serve this God in whatever capacity he wants. Okay? In trust, in warfare, in crossing the Red Sea, in the trust in me for water and provisions, they're going to need that kind of trust and service of God. okay, to God. And so he's asking Pharaoh, and Pharaoh asks a good question. Who's this Lord? And what's interesting on this, who's the Lord? Isolate. But he ties in that I should obey him. There it is. That's a good connection that Pharaoh's made. Yeah, I recognize there's a Lord and a Christ and a Creator. But wait a minute. He understands that obedience has something to do with it. Has a great deal to be with it. Okay? Because he understands that Moses is telling him, a prophet of God, that my God, the Lord, wants my people released. Wants them released and that we can obey. The sacrifice is part of that. All right. That's something for us to think about too as we teach and as we live our lives. Trust and belief is one thing, but it must be coupled with obedience in it. Okay? Good works. All right. In 5:3. Let's see. I need anything else I need to say here. And in reference to who is the Lord, that takes education, doesn't it? It takes learning. Teaching, if I can say that. All those sorts of things involved, aren't they? Who is somebody? Who is somebody that I must obey? Yeah, Ronnie.
Well, Pharaoh's going to find out who he is through his heart.
Yeah.
It's a good question.
It's a good question. I've already got all these gods serving everything I need. What do I need another one for? Yeah. And so, in 5:2, he says that. And 5:3, then they said, the God of the Hebrews has met with us. Please let us go 3 days' journey into the wilderness that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God, serve him. Otherwise, he will fall upon us with pestilence and sword. 5:4, but the king of Egypt said to them, Moses and Aaron, why do you draw the people away from their work? Get back to your labors. Get back to your labors. And Pharaoh said, look, the people of the land are now many, and you would have them cease from their labors. Is he talking to the people, or is he talking to Moses and Aaron? You guys are the rebel rousers. You guys are getting them stirred up. You guys wanted to stop work. You guys, you two guys. Okay, I know you said the Lord wants you to do this. So you'll see through there, look as you read, that really there's a lot of attention given to these two men and their leadership and the importance of their leadership and the importance of them to understand that God's with them because they'll have their doubts coming up. Yes, sir. And it's an important point here to look at verse 5. There are now many. And this is when there's many. And the king's thinking, okay, man, many. They've been doing my labors. They've been building my cities for me. They've been doing the crops. They've been doing the livestock. You know, we've been leaning back. And, boy, they go. What's going to happen to the economy? What's going to happen to, you know, us as a world? Supplying my armies. What? That's a big consideration, the economy of things, okay? And the manpower you have. Yes, sir. Yeah. In the last few minutes, I got a question. It says, is there any wisdom in Pharaoh saying, don't go? I was thinking about this. I said, here's all these people of God. Okay, sons of Israel, and they've been here for centuries here, and all of a sudden they're ready to go? All of a sudden they're getting religion? Where's these requests came into pass? They never wanted to leave before. Interesting, isn't it? Okay, and I call that the religion request. All right? So it's a new kind of request to the pharaohs and the kings that their labor source is leaving, and they want to leave. and they're being led by these two guys. All right, so it's a, is there wisdom in him saying you can't go? There is, because he's looking at that. Okay, that's my thoughts. Now, and again, the only thing different is Moses there and stirring them up. So, now, in the last few minutes, yes, ma'am. Well, we could guess that, but it doesn't say we're going to return in 3 days. All right? So, you know, some books say it took 3 days to get to Mount Sinai. I think it takes, but anyway, I guess if they hurried, they could. All right? But the point is, it doesn't say they're going to come out. It's an interesting point when you say that. Of course, they knew advance that he wouldn't agree with it. And I just want to say one point while we're there. In Exodus 8:25, if you could turn there real quick, just a point here before we close class. Why did they want to leave 3 days? Exodus 8:25 and 26. Let me get to it. All right. And Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron and said, go sacrifice to your God within the land. Within the land. And we don't leave Egypt. But Moses said, it is not right to do so. For we shall sacrifice to the Lord our God what is an abomination to the Egyptians. If we sacrifice what is an abomination to the Egyptians before their eyes, will they not then stone us? So apparently their sacrifice involved cattle, which is deity to them, sacred, or whatever things they were going to sacrifice. And so there was the idea that this is going to start a lot of ruckus, okay? And it's coming to stone them. You wonder if they've been doing it for the last hundreds of years, that's here to there, all right? So there's a reason why to leave, to do these sacrifices the right way for everyone to participate. Okay, thank you all very much. Move along next time. Please do your questions. Read ahead, please.